She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties. Well, why don't we just tell them to control their own dick?
There will always be women in rubber flirting with me.
Well, you know, some of us do both.
Hard. It goes hard.
Legs apart, arms flat, eyes to God.
I just sit here eating my popcorn.
We talked about that book last week.
With Jessie.
With Jessie.
Hello. I'm back.
Welcome, you're back.
I'm here.
We have you. We have with us author Francesca Zappia. This is your fifth time.
You
came for two of your books.
I came for two of my books. This is the fifth time. Two of my own books. Two books that weren't mine, and now the third one.
That's
not. This is not about mine. Yes,
oh my gosh. That's okay. Did you know though? April pointed this out to me. Did you know though? This is the episode you were on last year.
Yeah.
The same one?
The first episode that you ever were on was the same week, 2 years ago, in our second season.
2 years ago. Okay.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
I was like, I got scared at first because you said the first episode I was ever on, and I was like, that was a year ago? No, and then I had like a ton of flashbacks
episode,
of...
You forgot.
The third episode that you were on was also this week.
So we got to make it a yearly thing.
I think we have to continue to have.
Okay, yeah.
Well, just
it's our anniversary.
Because we usually do. This is usually your release time.
Oh,
we did.
You're right.
We did. Captain Hammer and Grey Miss Fair.
I'm sorry. I'm failing you.
It's our anniversary.
You are not failing us.
You literally just promised us to release a book next year because we asked you to.
I did just do that. Yes.
And then I cursed her out, gang, because writing a book is so fucking easy, right?
I don't have comment for that. I just
it hurts me to my soul.
She's so funny.
So it is so great to have you back again. I mean, you have moved. You moved since last time.
You're not in the anymore. Look at her daylight.
No, I'm not. This is natural light right here. I mean, I also have my overhead light on and my webcam light, but there's windows.
I love that.
I'm so excited.
And still have the Pokemon poster.
Yes, the Pokemon poster is still here.
I'm here for it.
Pokemon cards here.
Nice.
I have some of my other posters that were hanging up in my room, but you can't see those.
My Pokemon binder is also behind us.
Yes.
I don't have a lot of like valuable ones. I just have like a lot of derpy and cute ones that I love. So like Jigglypuff is my favorite. She's not going to do anything. She's not going to destroy anybody, but I love her.
I will tell you, I went through my old Pokemon cards about a month or two ago and started scanning them to see how much they were worth.
Mm-hmm.
It's too much.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I put them back in the closet and that's where they're going to stay.
Yeah.
I don't need to think about that.
When my kids really just started, when they really started getting into Pokemon, my husband busted out his Magic the Gathering cards. Because
those bitches are going to be expensive.
We have one that's worth $1,600.
Do you have a Black Lotus?
I don't know what he has, but I was like looking them up and he was like reading them to me and I was looking it up and I just start laughing and he's like, what's so funny? I was like, that one's worth $1,600. and he
has $1,600. No, sorry. Black Lotus is worth $16,000.
Oh, well, that's
pretty
dumb.
Fucking hell.
It's dumb.
He had all his magic cards with him on a Coast Guard cutter. They played on while they were out to sea. So these are cards that they've almost all been played with.
They've seen salt water.
They've been loved.
Yeah.
They've been used for their intended purpose.
They're still really worth a lot. So anyway.
My boyfriend and I have gotten so into Magic the Gathering, it's stupid.
So I learned to play when Tom and I were first dating. And I thought I was super good at it. Okay. I was kicking his butt all the time. I was using this deck. It was a fairy deck and I was just kicking his ass. Then I meet his best friend, Jeremy, the week of our wedding for wedding activities.
Oh, Jeremy.
And I'm like, I'm so good at Magic the Gathering. And he's like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, I have this fairy deck. He's like, are you using Tom's fairy deck? And I was like, yeah. He's like, you're not good at it. that deck is stacked. I was like, my soul
you're not
was
good. Crushed. That deck's just good.
My soul was crushed. Tom specifically like built this deck. Like he went to stores and bought the specific cards he wanted and never told me that he curated this deck. So I thought I was just really good.
When he
wanted to marry me. So
I've met Jeremy twice in my life. Mm-hmm. And that completely maths up. Mm-hmm. That completely maths up. He's absolutely going to put Tom on blast.
Yeah. I love Jeremy. He's a good friend for Tom. They're both equally nerdy and weird. And
well, they balance fine. Each other really well. It's aww. Lovely. Yeah.
That's so nice.
It's so nice.
So we have you this week to talk about another YA book. Not one of yours, but we're talking about The Grace Year by Kim Liggett.
It's some Hunger Games meets Handmaid's Tale meets Lord of the Flies. It's so wild.
The little
quote and those are all accurate. Like all those are accurate.
Survive together or die alone. And I didn't know this was a YA book until Molly had pointed that out. But I thought it was. It definitely qualifies as YA. We read another book. In February, it was this month, but we read Divine Rivals, which is really, really good, but it's YA, and I don't think it's YA.
I think it's YA.
Okay. Now I gotta read it.
Adults. They're adults.
Teenagers.
Is it like a Six of Crows kind of thing where they're technically teenagers, but the entirety of it's like this could have been adults and it wouldn't.
No, they're war correspondents and a magical war between gods.
And she never finished high school. And she's a war correspondent.
But she's 19 and he's like 20, so they're adults.
But neither of them went to college.
That doesn't matter. You didn't go to college.
Yes, I did.
As an 18-year-old.
Yes, I did. I'm smart.
I went to college at 18 and it didn't make me an adult.
What I'm saying is they have jobs and professions of grown-ups that would have done at least 2 to 4 years at university. You don't become a newspaper reporter just by stepping out of high school and being like, hey, give me a job, homie.
Okay, that's not the book we're here to talk about. We talked about that book last week.
Look how happy Jessie is.
I'm so happy.
She has missed us so much.
I just sit here eating my popcorn.
That's what Katie always says when she comes on. She's like, it's like watching us like do it live. Like it's so can I give you a synopsis? I wrote a very detailed synopsis. I'm pretty proud of this synopsis.
Good.
The Grace Year by Kim Liggett is a young adult dystopian horror novel about the fictional Garner County's abusive religion and condemnation of women. During every girl's 16th year, she is sent away to participate in the Grace Year, which is basically a free-for-all isolation with limited supplies and zero support in an effort to rid them of their dangerous magic before they are married to the men of the community who choose them. What is their magic, you ask? It can vary from girl to girl, but basically it boils down to tempting men and distracting them from their mission to God. This grace year is Tyranny James's. She and 32 other girls are led to the borders where they turn savage and brutal as they come into their magic. In addition to turning on each other, there are poachers outside the barrier hoping to find one to kill and break down for parts. That is what I said. To sell back to the county to be eaten for their magic. And all the while, the girls are living with the biggest rule they've been taught. Rid yourself of your magic so you can fulfill your wifely duties. Legs apart, arms flat, eyes to God. Content warnings for this book. There are a lot. Is incredibly violent.
That's not a laughable moment.
No. Religious trauma, suicide, PTSD, forced marriage, hanging, bullying, scalping, prostitution, sexual assault, and castration. Mm. Yeah. That's what we looked forward to.
You know what I realized? There is one more thing that this book reminds me of.
What?
The Village by M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, I thought that too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's like, I kept seeing that in there.
Yeah.
like the faux monsters. I couldn't separate those two. It's the same vibe. Anyways, sorry. Yeah. Go into leading. I apologize.
No, I've.
You're right. It does. By the way, he has a new movie coming out, and his daughter has a movie coming out. So, how old are we now? Like,
oh,
yeah, right, right.
God, I need to
wait. Words again. M. Night Shyamalan has a daughter who is releasing a film.
I'm pretty sure that I saw that.
I'm just gonna go dig my own grave now.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna go start digging. By the time I hit 6 feet up,
we still have things to live for. Yeah.
That's true. You did promise me a book next year.
I did. You have to live for that book now.
And we have 50 more minutes of content to fill, so I'm gonna need to at least stick to that.
Fine.
All right.
Fine.
First question. YA is your genre, Chezzy. This is Kim Liggett's third novel. How do you feel she does as a YA horror writer, which you have dabbled into as well? And this is like for all of us. Like, would we read her again?
I absolutely would. I went into this like I remember. I picked this one out of you gave me a list.
We gave you a list. From.
It was a great list. I picked this one because I do like horror, and I like The Hunger Games, I like The Handmaid's Tale, I like all those kinds of stories. And I think in YA, it can be, well, not even just in YA, in anything. It can be hit or miss whether or not the author actually hits the kind of heaviness of the themes that you get to with a book like this. And I think she did it. Like, she absolutely did it. I was very, like, I was into this book. I think I blazed through it in like 2 days.
I read it in three.
Yeah. It was a quick
read. It's hard to put down.
It's very hard to put down. Now that I'm thinking about it, like going over the content warnings, because like I'm a person who loves watching horror movies and reading horror novels and things like that. I am interested to hear from both of you if how you feel about the horror elements in this compared to like Katzenjammer.
So I would never label this horror. Like,
really?
This doesn't read, when I read horror, think of horror, I think Katzenjammer and darker, right? This is dark, this is scary, but this is more dystopian to me. This is otherworldly to me. This isn't horror because yes, it is scary. Yes, they are cutting these women up, but we aren't listening to her sit on a table and be sliced and diced. We're not seeing the true horrors in this book.
So I'm going to kind of agree and disagree.
With whom?
I don't read horror. It is not my thing. I don't read horror. No. I find the world to be scary enough, so I don't need that. I love dystopian, though. Hunger Games is still, for me, like, the pinnacle of YA dystopian.
Right.
Like, that is a point right there. But I've been reading dystopian since I was a kid, since I was in high school. My sophomore year, like, almost all the books we had to read were, like, dystopian in nature. We read Ant-Man's Anthem. We read Lord of the Flies. We read To Kill a Mockingbird, which can be viewed, you could almost put that society in a dystopian way because
of the way.
It's, I guess, more utopian, but whatever. And so that is one of my preferred genres. So originally I was a little weary about reading this because I was like, I don't like horror, but I'll read it. Like Molly has suggested, Chezzy's picked it, I will read it. But I ended up liking it more because I felt like it leaned more into dystopian. Now, with that said, I can see where Katzenjammer and this one would read really well together because Katzenjammer is also almost a dystopian society. They are now left to their own devices in the school.
Yeah.
For me, what really was hard for me to read this, and also something that I thought was important, is the religious trauma aspect. I talk about my religion on this podcast a lot. I go to church every week. I am a devout Christian. Mm-hmm. And as a teenager, I experienced a lot of religious trauma. I grew up in youth group when it was the I kissed dating goodbye, purity pledges, and all of that, where it was like women need to cover their bodies because God forbid you tempt your brothers. And it's like, literal. Well, why don't we just tell them to control their own dicks? Like, I don't know. Maybe that's what we do.
Yes.
So
maybe.
So for me, that's what I liked about this book. I was like, this is like looking at what would happen in an extreme circumstance in a Salem witch trials sort of way, where now we've decided that women are the problem. And then I really thought about it and I'm like, how far are we from that?
Yes. That's what I really loved about this book, is because I feel like she was doing what a good dystopian book does, which is takes the current structures puts a almost fantastical veneer on them to bring them to light, like to highlight them.
Right.
Nothing that she talked about in here is anything that hasn't happened. Like,
true. Absolutely.
But like, happened.
Witches. You're witches.
And I mean, that's why I love The Hunger Games so much, is because Suzanne Collins looked at the way that reality television was being portrayed and the way our world was and thought, this could happen. So I enjoyed this book, but I enjoyed the content more than I enjoyed the writing. I don't think that she's that strong of a writer.
Oh.
I think she can tell a story, but I didn't think the writing was that strong.
She is very long-winded.
It's not even that. Like, the book reads really quickly. There were literally inconsistencies and, like, errors that I was like, that's not even how you write a sentence. Like, that's not it. and that's the English teacher in me that gets critical of things like this. Right. But I really did enjoy the book. I gave it a 4, you know, a 4 out of 5. And, that's high praise for me.
I would be interested in see what she's written next, for sure.
Well, her next book, actually, she has one coming out this year. I'll link her website below. And all I put in my notes was, next book sounds interesting.
Okay.
And it's the same, like, genre, same vein, like, dystopian horror. So.
Yeah. It seemed like a lot of her books are, like, kind of also probably include, like, religious trauma type.
Someone needs to go to therapy instead of writing novels.
I don't want to stop her from writing novels. I get the entertainment.
Some of us do both.
Exactly.
Rub it in, bitch.
Molly, maybe you should like go to therapy and then you'll be doing both.
Maybe you'll get published. I haven't gone to therapy. That's my problem. I've never gone to therapy. Never seen a psychologist. Never been diagnosed. Never been told it's not my problem. Nope.
Nope.
And I do think also, I think the story was original. Like, I really thought, even though you can reference these other books that it was like it was still original.
Yes.
But that's the thing. We were pulling these different ideas in to explain it because we don't know how to explain it.
Yeah.
Because it feels like these things, but because it's its own beast and this own idea in this own world, we can't be like, it is Hunger Games. No, it's got pieces of Hunger Games. It's got pieces of Handmaidens. It's got pieces of this, but it's not that.
Yes, they truly are in this situation. They truly are comp titles because, like, there are books that you look at and you go, okay, you just took this book and mashed them together. And it's
right.
It's The inspirations are so obvious that there is no book of its own. You've just taken to it.
Right.
Whereas this is its own book. And you truly are just trying to get across, like, it's got Hunger Games elements. It's got, and like the thing with The Handmaid's Tale is I feel like she did with this. Very specifically, I remember having the thought that she made The Handmaid's Tale more accessible in this.
Yes.
Movie. Like,
yes.
And I like The Handmaid's Tale,
but it's a pretentious book.
Tale, and I've only seen the first episode of the series, it was too much for me. I couldn't do that.
I've never seen the show because I was like, I don't think I can. Mm-hmm.
The show's rough.
It's too
bad. Dystopian I prefer reading is YA because it usually is a little bit lighter.
The Handmaid's Tale goes so, and again, I like it. It goes real hard. And it goes real hard into like rape and just different stuff like that. That like,
you have to be in a really good headspace to read that shit.
Cause when you come out of it, you're not going to be in a good headspace. And this is like, it also has parts that are really hard to read, but I feel like does it in a way that is still very real and very grounded, but is not so difficult to read. I think is very like approachable for people who aren't as deep into like feminist theory and all that stuff as some people are.
Like to back what she's saying, I highlighted a couple lines in here because they've been bothering, like this book bugs me. This book bugs me because of, again, the feminist agenda.
It'll stay with you. For sure.
This line's from page 8. We're branded at birth on the bottom of our foot with our father's sigil. Mm-hmm. Okay? That is stage 1 of the girl's life, okay? Mm-hmm. And then later, the main character's in like the market and she's just being a girl and this gross old man says to her, "I see her magic's finally coming in."
It's so gross. There is so much gross stuff. And it's all stuff that like,
Men have had a man say something like that to me. Mm-hmm. I have had a man look at me and go, look me up and down and go, "Well, aren't you becoming a woman?" Mm-hmm. Gross. You're gross. An adult.
Disgusting.
I'm a child.
Yeah.
Gross.
I'm not now.
You know what else this book reminded me of? I have no idea why this is something I'm truly like fascinated with. Like I watched like tons of documentaries on it. It reminded me of like the polygamous compounds.
Yes.
Like
where there is one under. Yes.
They're being married off really young and
the religious fundamentalism.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It's the control.
I watch a lot of those documentaries. I have no idea why, but I'm so fascinated by that.
It breaks my heart. That's why I watch them, because I'm like, oh my God, this is devastating. Why am I watching this?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's awful.
So obviously all three of us really enjoyed this book, though.
I mean, we took 22 minutes to talk about the first question. So.
Right. Tyranny is a wild spirit. She is the closest her father has to a son. Her best friend is a boy, and she prefers the woods and wilds to proper girl things. The day of her veiling, which is essentially the day that the girls find out who, if anyone, picked them for marriage, Tyranny is shocked to receive a veil, like, at all. She's even more surprised to find out that her best friend Michael claimed her as a bride. And did you find this surprising? And do you think Michael really loved her?
Yes.
You were surprised, or you think he loved her?
Michael loved her. Mm-hmm. Michael loved her.
I agree.
The only person that was surprised was Tyranny. Mm-hmm. she's showing her naivete. That's not how you say that, but you know what I mean. She's showing how young she is by the fact that she's like, no, everybody knows what I want. They know they won't do this to me. They won't make me live this life. They're going to let me go live in the fields. It's fine. She doesn't know the truth about their world, and they were trying to keep her safe. Mm-hmm. And she really is pissed about something she can't control.
And I think, I agree. Like I wasn't surprised by it. I do think it was purely like a Tyranny is the only one surprised by it. I agree that Michael did love her. It was not a surprise to me that he was gonna propose to her. I think that was supposed to be like a dramatic irony,
kind of.
Yeah.
But I think in the beginning he loved her in that kind of innocent way where, like, he also didn't really understand what was going on.
Yeah.
And then when they came back and he covers for her, which I think we get into in a later question, but, like, he does understand better then that, like, mm-hmm. I have to do this. Like, our society will kill you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to do this for you. I don't know whose baby that is. I don't know any of this.
Right.
But, like, but he does love her in that moment because he's willing to take on this responsibility mm-hmm. to protect her and her family.
I wasn't surprised at all that Michael was the one that was going to propose and or veil her, not really propose, claim her. And I really do think he loved her. And, like, I didn't think that initially. Like, I thought, gosh, he's just like the rest of them. Like, he's just owning women. And then when we get to later in the story, it's like, oh, but maybe that's not what was happening.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he tried to tell her by saying, like, you could keep your dreams. Like, you don't have to change for me. But
her dreams were to work in the field. If you really wanted her to keep her dreams, you should send her out to the field.
I mean, her dreams were of a little girl saving all of them.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I really thought, though, there for when I first read it, this is my second reading. When I first read it, I was like, oh, shit, is she going to be stuck with the old guy? Is she going to have to procreate with the old dude? Oh no. Yeah.
I know this is later in the story, but I'm so glad he died before they got back.
Oh, God, yes.
He straight up had his wife executed so he could take a young girl.
Oh, my God.
Thing in this novel.
And the thing is, it's like, it's so, because, like, what I love is how she examines power structures in this book.
Yeah.
And actually, I think the next question gets into it. So if, I will hold on to that till the next question.
All right. Tierney has made an instant enemy in Kirsten, who was deeply favored to marry Michael. Kirsten, in typical mean girl fashion, is an absolute brutal queen bee. What did you think of her overall character development?
Kirsten found her match with her husband.
Probably.
For real. Also, what this book was able to do with the Queen Bee character is show how when you have a woman who buys into these misogynist power structures, that's how she gets her power. She gets her power from those structures. She's not going to go against them. She's going to go against anybody like Tierney who tries to break those structures down, because what does she have if not that?
Right.
So she's the one leaning into all this, like, magic and like teaching the girls that they have magic and like, you know, ooh, I made her do that. Like I got into your head and made you do things. Mm-hmm. And she is awful in that way because she buys into the societal power structure so hard.
Yeah.
And has nothing, like, forsakes anything outside of it.
Right. Mm-hmm. We all knew that girl growing up. There was always one girl like that in high school.
Mine was girls like that as adults, Molly.
Right. Oh, don't even get me started. My high school, it was field hockey. So, like, if soon as you give them power, they're going to run away with it.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to run away with it. And she knew that the other girls were that vulnerable. And she knew she had a leg to stand on because she already fucking fucked shit up for Gertie.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So she already knew that she could get away with this shit.
Yeah.
So I don't think Kristen had any growth. Mm-hmm. I think she was beaten down by the end of the book. I think life had just finally beat the shit out of her, and she was like, fine, whatever.
Well, she doesn't seem totally, because Tierney talks about how she sees her walking around with her maids. Mm-hmm. Like, she owns the town. So even though she didn't marry the head of the council, she's still going to carry herself like she did.
Yeah.
I did not like the voice the audiobook narrator chose for her.
It
was like this, and you are not right, Tierney. And I was just
she was a valley girl from the middle of the village. Okay,
I hated it.
Oh, God.
I did dual reading. So I was reading the physical book and I would listen to the audiobook so I could, you know, read the whole time. But I didn't like it. But I felt like you can't have this story without a Kirsten.
No, you have to have
a woman in this story who is leaning hard into the teachings. Because why would they go along with it? There has to be someone who's like, the men are right. Yeah. We have to listen to them. They must care for us.
We will die without the men.
We need the men.
You must always walk behind the man.
And remember to bow a knee every time he speaks to you.
They're in this book, there are so many characters where I'm like, you need to have that character, not because it's a YA trope to have a queen bee character, but because it is part of the themes that you're trying to get across.
Yeah.
It's part of the message you're trying to tell. Gertie was another one that was like, that's a character that we need to have in here.
We absolutely, yeah.
Because
I also like the idea that Kirsten is really closeted. She's a queer character that's closeted because of religious trauma, and I thought that's needed in this kind of book.
That's exactly what I was talking about. Like Gertie and Kirsten and like closeted like queer trauma and like one thing that she couldn't really talk about was like the like coming at it from like a people of color aspect, non-white aspect, which is fine because I don't believe, judging by her picture and her name and her bio, I think she's just white, which is fine.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's not, you don't have to touch on it if that's not your lane. I would be interested to read a story like that, that has that aspect in it, but, definitely like the queer aspect needed to be in here because you needed to see why like that is so looked down upon because it's like when women also don't like a lesbians, no go
lesbians,
B masturbation, no go because as soon as women don't need the men for their pleasure. Mm-hmm. Not that they need pleasure anyway, but like, it's like, oh, you don't need men for anything. Cool. Like,
and when we find out what Gertie was actually accused of in the lithograph, it's a woman masturbating. Right. In this picture. And the idea, and it's the quote that I used at the beginning, it's repeated throughout: legs apart, arms flat, eyes to God. They are not there for their pleasure. They are there to be vessels to make more men.
Yes.
And that's not something new. I mean, that's actually historically something that happened. And I mean, it still happens today. It's the job of the royals to produce heirs. You know what I mean?
Let's look at what's going on with Kate right now.
Exactly.
Oh. Let's look at what's going on with Kate right now. You know very well, part of the reason they didn't say shit is because people are worried she's going to stop making babies. And even though she's in her fucking 40s and it is dangerous for her to be still procreating, there is true loyal royalists who are like, she needs to keep producing as...
She made three. Like, it's fine.
They're good. It's good. Just leave
it. They still want more, man.
They don't need any more. They don't need any more. But yeah, so I feel like, you know, for her to be found with something where a woman is pleasing herself, so you've cut the men out of it, and she's actually looking for sexual pleasure, which is not what they're...
The audacity of that woman.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. The audacity that a woman would want that, you know?
Yes.
How dare you want joy?
Like if this book was... older, like if it wasn't a YA book, we may have actually gotten more of an open door with Tierney and Riker. Or we may have even seen an open door with her and Michael in the end.
Yeah.
Where maybe that's not what their intimacy looks like. Maybe their intimacy isn't legs apart, arms flat, eyes to God. Maybe their intimacy is like actually pleasing each other.
Right.
Yeah.
That's alluded to with Riker that's what happened.
Right. But yeah, you don't get as into the weeds with that.
And you shouldn't because it's YA.
Because it's YA.
We're not doing it in the YA books.
It's funny that like most of the time I'm not a big like romantic-y reader or anything.
Right.
Just because I'm like, I could take or leave the sex scenes, you know? And the one time I'm like, this is where a sex scene would be
necessary.
Would be valuable to the storytelling and like truly like to the themes of the novel and everything. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, maybe don't, maybe lay off on that one. Cause
right.
Cause
it's what,
but anyway, yeah, I, there's so much there.
Yeah.
So much.
All right. A lot of what appears to be happening in this book is a result of religious trauma, which we've already been talking about. The men want to break the women's spirits to tame them. So what do you think of this theme in a teen novel?
I think it's
I agree.
It's good. And I would not hand my daughter Handmaid's Tale for her to understand what's going on in this world. Mm-hmm. I will hand my daughter this for her to understand what's going on in this world. Does that mm-hmm. make sense?
Yeah.
I want my daughters to be prepared for this world.
Yeah.
And I mean, we left Texas for a myriad of reasons. Like Matt's work was one of them, but politics in our world, it is hard for women to defend themselves and stand up straight sometimes. And with everything that's been going on, books like this are a reminder for women that they have to protect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did I do that politically correct without offending anyone?
Good job.
I don't think that's the point of books, Molly.
No, it's not.
So for me, I feel like what this book does, that books like Hunger Games, where you also have a heroine, a woman mm-hmm. who's going to save the day, and it's a teenager. That book doesn't talk about feminism. That book doesn't talk about what it's like to be a woman. That book talks about what it's like to be a human being in the society that is awful to all human beings.
Yes.
This is a look at specifically how women struggle. And I don't think, so, you know, I have a degree in English, so I did have to read books and like, you know, use critique lenses. And some of the books that you read for a feminist critique, I don't feel like a teenager. I don't even know that I got it as a 20-year-old. This book, you read this book and you're like, oh, that's fucking right. Like, that's fucking
that's what
right.
we're dealing with.
That's this is the bullshit. Shit we deal with.
Yeah.
This is some shit. I think bullshit.
Yeah. I think she does a great job of distilling it into mm-hmm. like something that is, like, I don't even want to say that this is like, oh, it's like a primer almost.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the way, not even, this is not.
Primer's a great example, word for it.
It's like how people complained about the Barbie movie being mm-hmm. like basic feminism.
Yeah.
Like, this is,
Barbie, what did you expect?
First of all, some people need that. They need that base level. This is even, like, a step or two above mm-hmm. that.
This
like,
is this direct. This is more direct than Barbie.
This is direct. Like, and it does it in a way that is, like I said before, like, it's approachable
it
for
is.
Teens. Because it's about teens. And it's about the time in their lives where this, because like it happens from the time that we're little girls, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think as teenagers is where you start really starting to understand it.
Yeah.
And I think this is like, you know, being a teenage girl, maybe being 14 or 15, reading mm-hmm. this book and hearing like this old man say something like that to her and then going, I've had older men say weird stuff like that to me before. And like, it's creepy. You should be creeped out by that.
You should like, think that's not okay. We were actually just talking about this, some of my coworkers and I, because we're taking a required sexual harassment training. Uh-huh. And this training talks about the Me Too movement. And it was like, there was like a group of us talking, and it wasn't all women. There were some men there as well. But every one of us had a story. One person was like, the first time it happened to me, I was in second grade. Boy chased me around, pushed me down and kissed me. And I was like, what did your teacher do? And of course, nothing, because boys will be boys, right?
Which
don't fucking say that to my kids. Cause I have two boys and we don't use that phrase in our house. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I was sexually harassed at work at two different jobs, one as a teenager and one as an adult. And both of them I reported, and neither of them went any further.
I mean, I won't tell you how often it happened to me in the Coast Guard.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I won't, because it's awful. It's awful. Yeah. And And we're, like, the first time it happened to me, I honestly have lost count. I mean, I know I'm a pretty girl. I had big boobs. I was skinny. I was pretty. I'm pretty. It's not bragging. It's facts. I was a pretty teenage girl. And I was soft and soft-spoken and bubbly and a little not all there because I was still learning. I'm behind in a lot of ways because Audie ADHD. Fucking get over it. I didn't start doing the math on that kind of stuff until I was in my 20s and started looking back and going, oh my God. Oh my God. And I thought that's how people talked to me.
Yeah.
I always thought that's how, because of how I look, it's my responsibility to take that kind of language in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and going back to like what I was saying with the religious trauma, like every mission trip I went on, every like Christian camp I went to, it was girls can't wear spaghetti straps. You can't wear two pieces. You don't want to cause your brother to stumble. It's like, I don't understand why he's allowed to go to the beach without a shirt on, or he's allowed to be around camp without a shirt on. What do you think that's doing to me? Do you think I'm not turned on by the fact that he's bare chested? Like, we're human. You got to be responsible for your own hormones. That's not my job.
My girls at space camp, the NASA space camp, the one that's fucking owned by the United States government, boys are allowed to swim in just trunks. Girls have to have swim trunks, a full swimsuit, not a two-piece, a full swimsuit and a t-shirt on. Girls have to swim in clothes.
That is complete fucking nonsense.
This goes from...
That's nonsense.
That goes from their youngest age, which is 8 or 10, all the way up to the high schoolers.
Now, let me tell you.
Piper yelled at someone for when she went to take her shirt off to like dry off. And they're like, you can't do that. And she's like, I'm drying off. I can do what I want.
Just make her wear a one-piece swimsuit. Like,
they've worked.
What's wrong with you? That's the thing. Just like... What?
Might as well separate them then. Don't talk to the boys.
I personally am somebody who dresses more conservatively. I don't show a lot of my body. And I don't...
That's your choice.
I don't super love it when teenage girls are wearing, like, slits up to their vaginas on their dresses. Like, I don't super love that because I feel like you should be a little kid for as long as you can. But I also feel like no one should tell me how I'm supposed to dress. Like, I don't want you to tell me that.
No.
And my son, my oldest son, he's going through family life class right now. Like, they're doing the talk at school. And it's Virginia, so it's abstinence only. When he first started having these conversations a couple of years ago, because in third grade, he had girls in his class who already had to wear bras and were already having their periods. We had a talk with him, and basically we told him, look, girls' bodies are going to start to look different, and it's your job not to comment on it. It's not your place. It's not your place to talk about their bodies. No. And, you know, that's how I'm raising my boys. They don't have the right to comment on a woman's body. Now,
I wish every mother of sons and every father of sons took that advice.
Me too. Now, it's a little bit different when Tom says, your ass looks amazing in that dress, April. And I'm like, yeah, it does. Thank you.
That is appreciated and welcome.
Yes. Because I've chosen to let him be somebody to make those comments to me.
Right.
But if he was somebody that
My feelings will be hurt if you don't say that shit, dude.
But if I'm just walking down the street and someone's like, your ass looks good in that dress. I'm like, what the fuck? Do not talk to me. Who are you?
And like, I'm used to it.
Yeah. It's...
You know the line from Rent? There will always be women in rubber flirting with me. That's me. I am Maureen Johnson.
Oh my God.
You're welcome.
Tracks.
You're welcome, Gary.
I love that so much. All right, let's go on to the next question. No one speaks about what actually happens during the grace year, but every girl seems to come back home broken physically and mentally. Were you surprised to find out that the violence was mostly what they did to each other? How about the fact that one girl literally kills herself before the start of it so she doesn't have to go through it?
I am zero surprised.
Same. Women are awful to each other.
Zero surprise. One, high school, this is like peak high school, okay? Mm-hmm. They're all like right there at the peak of high school hormones. They're all lusting over the same fucking boys. Mm-hmm. It is when those fights happen the most in high school, mm-hmm. right? When girls mm-hmm. have just lost their mind and it's just no control. There is mm-hmm. nobody there that's sane. But what mm-hmm. pisses me off is, you know very well, the first year of Grace Girls came back and was like, look, the water made us feel funny. And the men were like, don't say anything to the other girls.
I don't think they even realized it was the water. Like, I don't think that the other
some girls smart girl figured it out. There can't be, there has
it's
to be
possible like those, that it was Tyranny's mom that figured it out.
I mean, they've been meeting in secret for a long time. So yeah. Those women knew. They've just been being fucking kept quiet.
I mean, they burn all the supplies that they've.
It's such bullshit.
Yeah. And that's the thing. That was part of what I love so much about this book, was that it illustrated in like very exaggerated terms mm-hmm. how the reason shitty. Girls go like that at each other in mm-hmm. high school and stuff is because of how they are forced to act within the power structures of our society.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like,
absolutely.
I was sitting there reading this and I was like, she's getting it. She's getting it. Like, yeah.
You fuck! It's so annoying!
Because it's like, well, go ahead.
So I was actually talking to my small group at church about something along these lines, that it is still so deeply in us. So we were talking about, my son had his first sleepover, and I told my husband like the things that we do to each other during sleepovers. We're like,
girls are bitches.
Freeze their bra if they fall asleep first. I mean, like, yes. We do brutal things to them.
I've left so many sleepovers because of bullies.
Why would you do that? Like, you guys are friends. I'm like, that's how you treat your friends when you're a girl. It's what you do. And I was telling my small group this, and I was like, what's really interesting is as far as we've come, and as much as like I am a feminist, it's still deeply, deeply ingrained somewhere in our DNA that we yes. have to win the heart of the highest ranking hunter in the pack.
It is a like scarcity. Like, mm-hmm. we're running on a scarcity. So if one girl has something, you can't have that thing.
You can't have that thing.
So we're like, naturally jealous towards each other.
Regina told me
bullshit.
That hoop earrings were her thing, and I wasn't allowed to wear them.
Exactly. And it's like,
and my dad got me these gorgeous diamond hoop earrings for Christmas, and I couldn't
Monica.
Wear them. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. That was really rude of me.
It's mean, girls. I think it's okay.
I can't believe I disrespected the Bible like that.
It's okay.
That's girl Bible. That's mean girl Bible. Girls, by the way.
I love Mean
It girls. Goes along with girl math. Girl mean Bible girls is Mean Girls.
Mean Girls is so good. And it's so good because it's like, oh yeah, fuck, this stuff happened. This is
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, we're going to start handing out things when you get your period. You're going to get the Grace year. You're going to get this Mean Girls.
You're gonna get
a heating pad. You're gonna get a box of Midol. You're gonna get
a box of Midol. Yeah,
a box of
12 pack.
Like a big box of Midol.
We're gonna get you pads and tampons. Chocolate.
And they're gonna be free hygiene products because we don't have a choice in the matter.
Also, we're not gonna charge you tax on it. Because a pink tax is bullshit. You should not be taxed for just being born a goddamn woman, motherfuckers. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Why do men get condoms for free when they choose to have sex? And we don't get pads or tampons for free. It's not like I choose to bleed every man.
Why has male birth control not been researched more? Oh, the men got tummy aches in the trials. It hurt them a little bit. I hope some man listens to this episode and like
the man that edits this is gonna love it.
He's gonna hate this episode so much. He's gonna hate it so much.
We love you, Tom.
They just recently started looking into what is basically like an IUD for men. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be getting painkillers, anesthesia when they get their IUD.
They get anesthesia for it. They get nothing.
Spread that motherfucker over our cervix and just say it's fine.
We're just gonna shove this up
inside
you.
Or when we get an annual exam and they go in with those pinchers and they go in and they grab.
just a little
bit.
And they're cranking, and you're like, how big does my vagina need to be?
And they go in, and there's these sharp little tongs. It's, if you know what the pickle scissors are, you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. The little pickle things? Mm-hmm. Pickle grabbers? That's what they're using, folks. Mm-hmm. They're taking the pickle grabbers, and they're going in, and they're not sharp. So taking a sample of skin, and they're grabbing with the pickle grabbers, and they're slowly pulling it.
Ugh. And God forbid,
we don't get numbed.
Maybe about to start your period when you're scheduled to have this exam, mm-hmm. and then they get all up in there, and then they're like, "Oh, I'm sorry, we have to reschedule. I can't see anything." You're like, mm-hmm. "You are already in there.
Like you're
just
there.
Clear it. Just stick around a little bit.
Just do whatever you got to do.
Eventually. No. Do you know how much I geared myself up to be here today? Come on.
I had to prepare myself for what someone seeing between my legs. Do you know how much that fucking mentally sucks? I shaved my legs for this, goddammit.
Yep. I don't shave my legs for it. And then when you get a little bit older, Chezzy, and you get to start having mammograms, those are fun too.
No, I don't want it.
Boob is all sweaty, and they're like moving it around.
They
on
just
like
smush it like a sandwich, and they're like doing this, and they're like
slides, and it's like not sliding right. And I'm like, oh my gosh, can I please? And they're like, we made the room warm for you, so you wouldn't be cold while you're standing here naked.
Thanks.
You know what? I'm sweating because this is anxiety inducing. Like, let's make it cold. I want ice. Okay, I want ice.
And then if the machine doesn't see you right, it has to start all over. And if you're short, they give you a step stool. And guess what? If that step stool wiggles, you have to do it all over again.
I don't have the short problem. I'm very tall.
Oh my God.
I had the short problem. I was like this. My boob was up and I was down. And I'm like, they're like, okay, we go get the stool.
Oh my God. No, I don't want any. I didn't ask for any of this.
We didn't either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sorry, going back to what we were actually saying. Yeah. This surprised me that the girls were doing it to themselves. None of it. They didn't even need the poison, which is like going into the next question, but they didn't even need that. They still would have attacked each other.
Like, yeah. I mean, think about how mean we are when we're all on our periods and just in the group chat.
I'm just having a bad time. Like, I don't want people to talk to me. And then it's like,
that's from the moment you start bleeding to the moment you stop bleeding. I'm having a bad time.
Age
of 13 to 59.
I'll start crying out of nowhere. And then 2 days later and get my period. I'll be like, I knew it. It wasn't.
I know. Right.
Guess what I have in my house now? Two little warning beacons who both get theirs a month before mine. So it goes Piper, then Livy, then I'm like, oh, I don't feel good and I've been a real bitch to everybody lately.
Poor Matt.
Poor Matt. Fuck you. He's the big cat balls.
I remember being in middle school and the boys... Like, for some reason, our question of the day one day was, who has it harder, boys or girls? And all the girls in the class were like,
girls.
And all the boys, because we have to have periods. Mm-hmm. And the boys in the class were like, no, we do, because we have to deal with you when you're like that. Like, and then every girl like in the class attitude. Was like, I'm going to murder you today.
Mm-hmm. My brothers, because I'm one of four and I only have brothers and I only have boys. My husband's one of four boys, so we're a boy family. My brothers would just be like, I never trust anyone that can bleed for 7 days and not die. And I was like, that's right, bitch. Come at me.
Yeah.
Come fucking at me.
Neither do I. So we're all working on.
We're all in the same program. We fucking know, homie. We don't trust it either. This witchcraft is bullshit.
Yeah.
Whoever gave us this curse, we'd like to give it back now, please.
Yeah. Fuck you, Eve. All right. Shortly after arriving at the Gracier, all the girls start acting more erratically, and they have dilated pupils. Like, this is about the time I texted Molly and said, I'm pretty sure the water is poisoned.
Drugs.
Kirsten says that this is them coming into their magic. We learn, spoiler, in case you're new here, we give spoilers. Unless it's like a new book. When we do Chezzy's books, we don't spoil them. That is actually the water being poisoned with hemlock. So were you surprised that they were being poisoned?
Nice. As soon as I heard about like the dilated eyes, I was like, oh, they're high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Higher than a motherfucker.
Yeah. Which I did. there is a little part there in the beginning where I was like, okay, is she actually going to have a magic thing in here, or is it all going to be
same?
And I was glad that it was all real.
Oh,
and
yeah,
the,
me
the
too.
The magic was just, you're on drugs.
Yeah, the magic in them was not
his
real
hemlock.
Magic.
Which is magical. I bet it felt magical at first until they were pulling on their hair out and eating flesh and shit. Like,
yeah.
The scalping was the one that did it for me.
Scalping? Do you have a question about that? I really want to talk about it.
We do. It's actually a couple questions away. So.
I really want to talk about it.
All right. So this book is told through four seasons of the Grace year, because that's an entire year. And it doesn't include any true chapters. How do you feel about this format? So for me, I hated it with the audiobook. It was very, very difficult to switch back and forth between the book and the audiobook because there were no chapters.
There's no stopping points. There's no stopping points.
Yeah, I need the stopping points. Like, I don't want to say, that it, like, it didn't, it obviously didn't ruin the reading of the book or anything.
No.
Yeah. I would be interested to know what the thought behind it was. Yeah. Like,
so you get these, if you're watching us on YouTube, you get these little, like, cross posts every so often that I guess is
sometimes
like,
there's these little nubby things.
Transition. But because there wasn't chapters, like, I think Molly, you maybe had said this to me when we were texting, the idea, no, this might've been Divine Rivals, but the idea that the year, they don't have a way of really keeping the time. So it's just like,
yeah, that was Divine Rivals. Yeah.
I think that's maybe why there weren't chapters, but it was really irritating. It was hard to know when to stop. Yeah. Also, and this is one of the things that made me say, I don't think that she's that strong of a writer. This book was such a slow freaking start.
It was a slow start.
Oh my gosh. It took forever to get into it.
But it was world building. I feel like it was world building.
She did a great job with world building. And
oops.
You get this much of the book. Oh, sorry. I skipped ahead. It's more than half of the book is the first two seasons. So this is fall and winter. And this is spring and summer. It's more than half is that beginning part, and then the end was kind of like, oh, we probably should try to finish this book. Maybe we should try to finish this book. So that's what bothered me. I just felt like there wasn't a good balance there. But I will still say I thought the story was really good.
Yeah.
It was really original and good.
It's definitely a struggle with the audiobook. With the audiobook, you don't notice that there's no breaks, right? You just kind of find a spot and you stop. But I could see as a physical reader, you're like, okay, when do I stop? When do I stop?
It did start to feel a little bit like a fever dream where it's like, you're like there should be an end coming, right? Wait, did I pass a chapter and I forgot? Like what?
Yeah.
But there were several moments in this book where you have to rewind or turn back. You're like, wait, did that just fucking happen?
Yeah.
Speaking of, let's talk about one of those moments. So this book is incredibly violent. So was there a scene that really sticks out to you? Like for me, it was Gertie being scalped.
Oh, it was the axe in the chest. Oh, when she literally like when Kristen started to like take the axe and used it against people, but she didn't realize she was using it against people and she was stoned off her pants.
She basically gets tyranny like right here.
Yeah, and like the it's just
clavicle
it was
area.
I felt the pain. I've been beat by enough girls at that age. I have been physically assaulted by children of my own age enough times. I know what it feels like to be attacked like that. I may not have been taken to a weapon, but I've been beat by multiple groups of girls just for being. So I can imagine what that was like for her. I can put myself in those shoes and be like, fucking Christ.
Yeah.
Fucking Christ.
She doesn't realize that she scalped Gracie or Gertie. She just kind of does it.
Right.
She doesn't even realize it.
You know, okay. This is totally sidetracked. The one thing that's the most ridiculous in this book for me, and it's a little bell. You're telling me that girl, Kristen, Kirsten. Didn't for it, whatever. She's a bitch. We all know that. You're telling me that girl didn't force everyone to celebrate her birthday? She is a true center of attention Leo who would have absolutely reminded everyone when her birthday was.
But I think that is explained away, Molly, though, because when Tierney comes back after she leaves Riker and Gertie is just like hanging out in the water, a chunk of her head missing. Which, how did she survive?
How did she do that?
Magic.
They lost track of all time since Kirsten left.
Yeah.
So that's why. They were just high.
They were just
She didn't know what was going on. That's why they didn't celebrate.
But then she would have definitely had a, oh my God, we forgot my birthday moment when she sobered up.
Okay, maybe. But like, again, how did Gertie, how was she still alive? She clearly had a nasty infection, so much so that they made her leave because it smelled.
Smelled so bad.
It was just like gooey.
Anyway, so that was it's the axing for me. Mm-hmm. What about you?
I think like things that stick out to me in horror, especially of stuff that's really violent, is when when they get to the like encampment or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they see the tree that has all the ears and fingers mm-hmm. and braids and stuff like nailed to it. Mm-hmm. And that realization of like, oh, we thought they lost their fingers and we thought they lost body parts from going out in the woods or from mm-hmm. just the hardship of living in the wilds. It's like, no, this was a punishment tree. Like they cut mm-hmm. these parts off of each other. Mm-hmm. That freaked me out.
And her mom tells her in the beginning. Her mom tells her in the beginning, "Your eyes are wide open, but you see nothing. You don't understand what's happening there.
Trust no one." She said that several times.
Not even herself.
Trust no one.
And told her about the spring water being better high up because she knew what was up.
Mm-hmm. And like, there was another. Oh, just the stuff about the poachers and like the fact that they allowed the poachers to do their thing. I really thought that like there was a part of me in the beginning of this book that thought that all the like men who chose women throughout the year would be the ones who like went and like kind of like for sport got to go.
I thought that at first.
I texted Molly and I was like, I'm pretty sure that the poachers are actually like the guys and Michael is the one that let her go when it was Riker. So I thought that too. What's interesting to me is it's not just the poachers being allowed to do it. They're paid by the county. They are paid to go out and hunt them.
Because it keeps the structure alive.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
If there's no poachers, if the poachers aren't allowed to kill the Gracier girls, they're going to leave. Mm-hmm. They're going to go somewhere else where they can hunt and fish mm-hmm. and find a better life. And then they're going to leave this stupid town. And the structure that is us holding this religious power over these women ain't going to work so well if they don't have fear of leaving the box, you know?
Well, the poachers aren't actually from the town. They're from the outskirts. And a lot of them are the kids that are born to the women in the outskirts who are essentially prostitutes for the men in the
community.
Yeah,
they're bastard kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I know you don't like that word, but that's how they're used.
That word that bothered me. It was the idea that all these really super religious guys are going to go out and have sex with prostitutes.
Yeah, because they use their religion as a smokescreen
to do whatever they want
to have power.
And they so heavily believe it, and I know I'm skipping ahead again, but they so heavily believe it that they're able to believe Michael when he says that was her magic.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't even know, part of me is like, yes, the town believed him when he said that. Part of me thinks that they let him do that because he found a way to make it feed into their narrative. So they were like, fine, because if we say no, that means that we are lying and everybody else will turn
against
us.
Then the structure falls apart.
Right.
The structure falls apart. We're going to let you keep her mm-hmm. because you found a way around it. Like, he kind of used their own system against them.
Loophole!
Well, and I think that they probably also thought that he would punish her for it.
Privately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which he didn't do. Does I was it. Actually surprised he didn't. All right.
I'm not. He loved her.
Incredibly YA pitfall. Here's my. Tierney is abducted and nursed back to health by one of the poachers named Riker. And of course she falls in love with him. I literally texted Molly and was like, are you fucking kidding me? Is she going to fall in love with the guy that captured her? What did you think about this plot point? You probably guessed how I felt.
I'm with you on this one, April. Like I got,
we did not need a love story in here. Mm-mm. We did not need a love story in here.
I got to this part of the book, and because this is the midpoint, is like he finds her and nurses back to health.
Man.
And I was like, it really did feel like a, like just drop in the pacing and the the intrigue of the for story. Sure.
And it totally took away from what was actually happening in the camp. Like that was the point of telling me what these girls are doing to each other.
Yeah.
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 I mean, I get the point of Riker. I get the point of Riker's storyline. I get the reason we throw this in. She has to understand what it's like on the other side of the fence. She has to understand what it's like on the other side of her world, because she doesn't know what it's like for the girls after they leave the Gracier. She doesn't know what it's like for the outskirts of town. She has an idea. She has a thought from watching and being a creep and creeping around and stuff, but she has no fucking clue what's going on. She needs Riker to kind of set the world straight for her and be like, get your ass back to your soft and cushy world where you're safe.
Okay. Yeah. But she doesn't need to fall in love with him.
Absolutely not. That was bullshit.
And I am a fan of love triangles. Like, I don't have a problem with them, but this one was completely fucking unnecessary. She did not need to fall in love with Riker.
Oh, no. And the fact that they made it into a love triangle when she really doesn't have feelings for any of them.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I never... It did feel... Oh, yeah, I just... I know this is...
All okay. The feels, huh? Huh, Chessie? All the feels.
Yeah, so I absolutely did understand why it was in this book.
Right.
But yeah, I don't think she needed to fall in love with him. Mm-hmm. I also, as I get older, I struggle more and more with the idea of being able to fall in love with someone who is killing you. Like, like, okay, he's being nice to you. He's not poaching you.
Mm-hmm. He's still doing it to the others.
But he's doing it to the others. And he would have if you did not have, what, like, special eyes or something? Or, like, if you weren't the daughter of your father, like...
Mm-hmm. Right.
He would have killed
your father's daughter.
Yeah.
He would have killed you. He would have chopped you up into little pieces. He would have sold you to people.
You would have been in a jar, baby.
Yeah.
Jar.
And the idea that, like, you can...
As good as mama's cooking, Prego.
I can understand. I can understand getting past that to a point of like, hey, we need each other to survive. Maybe even you become friends, but like romantically involved with one another is like,
it went too far.
Like, no, it just doesn't.
I would have preferred it if they were friends. But I think that she was so wrapped up in what happens at the end, which we're almost there, so I'm going to hold my thought. But I think she was so wrapped up in that being the conclusion that she had to have her fall in love with somebody outside. I'm going to skip the question I read about Gertie because I feel like we talked about queer representation in this book. Are you guys cool with that, or do you want to talk more about Gertie?
I think Gertie – the only thing I want to say about Gertie is – I think Gertie was necessary for the story.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
I've read a couple reviews on this novel, and a lot of people feel like Gertie's story's not necessary for some reason.
No, it is.
And I would like to argue that
there are a lot of stories in this that I would have cut out, but hers is not one of them.
I feel like Gertie is that character who, she's that woman who, like, she understands that to survive, she just has to do what she has to do.
Yeah.
Right.
She'll marry the creepy old man. Mm-hmm. She'll go along with the other young girl. Like,
it's just, I really had to argue that point for the internet. I don't know who you are. Hmm. I could read your handles offline. I'm not going to. but I will say this, folks. Gertie's necessary. That girl was a touch point
for mm-hmm. our main character. And if mm-hmm. she did not have Gertie in that camp, she would never mm-hmm. have gone back to that camp.
Yeah. And when we're doing a story that is essentially a religious trauma, and particularly how women are treated in religion, you cannot have that conversation without queer representation. You just can't.
You can't.
So y'all shut up on the internets. Moving on. We can now stop talking about Gertie. Thank you.
All right, so let's talk about symbolism. So this book leans real heavy into the symbolism of flowers. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on them using them to send messages and share beliefs?
I need to read her research and what the point of all this was. I get the point. I get I don't care that much about flowers.
No, I think we need a backstory or some sort of glossary of terms when it comes to the flowers, because I don't know that much about them either. Like, I know what yellow roses and red roses are, and that's about it.
And it's not like there's flowers all over the pages of this book. It's not like we get points where, like, there's a little stop in the book. Like, if... What's her name? The one that wrote Hunger Games. Suzanne Collins. If Suzanne Collins wrote this, you'd get little stops and bits where you're getting information. You know what I mean? It just...
And I do think
that's the feeling, the face. The
women wearing a flower as the women that meet doing a flower, I think that was smart.
Yeah.
It could have been anything. It could have been a red ribbon or something that, like, you know, could have been anything. Yeah. But I didn't really think that the flower talk was, like, super necessary. But, you know, that's fine. What do you think, Chase?
Part of me liked it as a world building thing.
Yeah.
Part of me liked it as, like, because she does, there are a couple times in here where she describes the girls as different kinds of flowers. Like, she calls Kirsten like a, I don't know if she calls her a carnivorous flower or like a poisonous flower or something like mm-hmm. that. But you also have the thing of, like, the kind of often used comparisons of women and girls to flowers and the mm-hmm. flowering of women and
mm-hmm. the symbolism of it blooming.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I can see where she went with it. I would have loved it.
It's the bullshit flag. Like, it's bullshit flower. Filler. It's bullshit symbolism. She wanted to make the book deeper.
What were you going to say, Chess?
Sorry.
I would have liked a glossary or something. I've actually recently been rereading the Bone Season series, and the second book does some stuff with flower language, and I'm like, where do you get this
information?
I try to look it up online, and I'm like,
who's this?
Everybody has different things that different flowers mean, and I'm like,
How did you get into botany? That's my question. Mm-hmm. That's all I want to know.
I want to get into botany. I want to know what flowers mean.
All right. I know we're like way over time.
You're a writer. Go do it then. You have the skills.
So we're like way over time, but I'm going to try to rush through this next part. So the guard Hans. So this was like a really small side story. So Hans seems like a really nice man. When Tyranny first meets him, he's been castrated so that he can become a guard. And he did it because the woman that he was in love with was veiled by somebody else. And it turns out Hans has a dark side. So what do you think about that?
This reminds me of the line, just because a girl's nice to you does not mean she likes you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just because a girl's nice to you does not mean she's flirting with you.
He tells her, I knew you wanted me. She's like, I was 7. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? I was 7.
Do you really think a 7-year-old was flirting with you? She saw you in pain and wanted to hold your hand so you were not alone.
Right. A woman was nice to you, so you thought that meant that she wanted to sleep with you.
That does not mean that.
No.
95% of my military career.
Hans kind of felt like he was supposed to be the sort of the representation of the, like, manifesto killer, like a real, like, incel, like... Mm-hmm.
Creepy dude who had nothing else to live for kind of thing.
I feel like if his story was left out, you still have the same book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you guys may not agree with me, but I would have rather had more of his story and less of that shit with Riker. Like, agreed. I don't need that Riker stuff. I want that story. I don't need the relationship. So
yeah, I agree with that.
So I want to break down the ending. So again, we give spoilers here. I know if you've stuck with us, this is a really long episode, and I'm so sorry about that. But get to talking with Francesca Zappia, and like, we can't stop. Like, she's amazing.
We're going to talk forever.
We promise we'll not talk forever because Chezzy has a life too. all right. So these are like the way that the book ends. So I broke it down into some key parts. So the first is that Tyranny nurses all the Gracier girls like back to health. She has them fresh water. She has vegetables that she gives them. And everyone but Kirsten believes that the magic isn't real, that they were being poisoned. And Tyranny decides to leave them and go back to Riker. Okay. Thoughts on that?
The girls were less grateful than they should have been. They still
treated her. Why does she need to go back to Riker? Come on.
There's a lot of going back and forth in this.
That's unnecessary.
So unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you don't get this next part otherwise.
Right.
When Tyranny reaches Riker, he is killed by other poachers after Anders turned him in for running away with Tyranny.
Yep. Which, I mean,
it's not necessary.
Stupid games get stupid prizes.
Mm-hmm. Play stupid games, you win stupid prizes.
Honestly, she could have just not gone back to him and then gone back into town and been pregnant. Mm-hmm. And, like, they can't live together. Yes. Like, you could have had the same story. Yeah, like, he's still doing his thing.
She did not need to go back again. No.
No.
She did not need to go back
again. No, the only reason she had to go back is so they could kill Riker.
Yeah.
Because Riker isn't dead, she has no purpose in town.
But I'm not a writer, but I think there's a way that you could have killed Riker and it's still been within a story of that she doesn't go back. The example is what happens with the next one, which is that Kirsten's trying to prove the magic is real, so she steps outside of the barrier.
Oh my
and
God,
Anders
yeah.
gets her by the throat. And you could have had a struggle between Riker and Anders there. You could even have had Tyranny have to be the one to kill Riker.
Yeah.
You know, there could have been a real big, I don't think she would have killed him, but
she absolutely wouldn't have.
There could have been a twist where he ends up dead anyway, and she doesn't go back, you know?
It could have been help.
He could have been the guard or the poacher that was killed by the girls at the tree. Like, you don't have
to. There are so many different ways they could have handled it, for sure.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be that. But Kirsten's reaction when she realizes that, oh shit, I don't have magic. That was. Yeah.
That was a harsh reality that girl needed, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was the moment. All right. So then Tyranny tells the other girls that they should not show any solidarity with her when she returns and just let her take the punishment coming to her. And at that point in time, we don't really understand why she would be punished other than her standing up and saying, like, this is wrong. We're not going to keep doing this.
Right.
And as she's walking, we hear, as they're walking back, we hear Riker's mom yell, I know you. You have her eyes.
Yeah.
That's kind of the point where I was like, oh, Tyranny's mom.
Yeah.
She didn't say his eyes. We knew Dad went to the woods a lot. But that was like.
Yeah, but she thought it was the little girl. She thought she'd know the little girl. The little girl from the dreams. Yeah. Oh my God, there is magic. I just don't fucking have it. Damn it.
So this is the big reveal. When the girls arrive home, it is revealed that Tyranny is pregnant with Riker's child.
Mm.
Michael claims that Tyranny's magic was her visiting him every night in his dreams, and the baby is actually his. This saves Tyranny from death, and she marries Michael. And we talked about in the beginning, like, that was him showing that he really loved her.
It's Peeta waiting for Katniss to heal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's Pete. It's the selfless boy showing he loves. It's the bread with the boy. It's the boy with the bread.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was the moment where he was like, we weren't married yet. I'm gonna just. That's fine. I love you, and I'm not gonna let these people hang you right now. This is not gonna happen. And then. The usurper is revealed to actually be Tyranny's mom. And I really liked how she broke down all these things that were said to Tyranny by other women to like unravel what she was actually thinking they were saying. When they were telling her stay in the woods, they weren't saying you are so wild, you need to stay in the woods. They were saying, you will be safer if you stay in the woods. Like, yeah, don't stay in the camp. I liked that, how that unraveled. Michael burns the poacher's trophies in the apothecary, which was, like, huge. And it's revealed that he's always loved Tierney and that he wanted a better place for her, too.
Oh, yeah. A season of change is definitely coming for them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which brings us to our big season of change. Tierney gives birth to a baby girl, and her name is Grace. Of course it is. The baby is born Breach, and the birth is really difficult. The birth is really difficult. Grace is revealed to be a girl, the girl Tierney had been dreaming about, with the strawberry mark under her eye. And so I have a final question here, because I think this is open to interpretation, but the very end, Tierney sees Riker again. So do you think she died giving birth to Grace?
Yes and no.
Yes, I think she did.
So I went and reread the end again.
I think that's what they want us to do. I think they want us to think she's dead.
I think she is.
She's going to be back as the next James Bond. Sorry. Go ahead,
Chelsea. She's going to be back as the next James Bond. There's a couple of lines that she uses. She says, as I close my eyes and let out my next endless breath, which makes me think, okay, that's your last breath. You just died. Mm-hmm. So she sees Riker, and he's walking toward her. And then the last line of the book is, holding my ground, I wait to see if he'll take me in his arms or simply pass right through me. So I think that's, like, that's the question part of, like,
yeah,
if he takes her into his arms, she's dead. He passes through her, she's not.
He's a ghost, yeah.
And he's a ghost.
But it also made me think of the spot where his dream was that there would be a really big buck that would walk up to him.
Oh. Yeah.
And so I thought that was, like, that imagery coming back again, too. I think that she died. And I think that Grace is going to be raised by Michael, who's now seeing that things are wrong. And also his aunt and mom, who are clearly usurpers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's how Grace will save everybody. I think
Because he's not going to want to send his daughter he's raising alone.
No.
Yeah.
To the Grace here. No.
To the Grace here. Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Right. Yeah.
And that's her burden, right? That's the whole point of this book, is it is her burden to bring Grace into this world so that she can die, so that Grace can change everything. Mm-hmm. That's the fucking dreams.
That's what I think. But to me, it's like Star Wars, right? So the twins' mom dies during birth, and you know. You gotta have.
You are the chosen ones.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I saw a TikTok today that was like, okay, was captioned, this is how I think the chosen one speech goes. Okay, King, we have a million soldiers here. You need to pick the one that will be the chosen one that will, like, save us all. And he's like, how about the little scrawny girl in the back? And he's like, you don't want to try, like, anyone else. Like, you don't want to try anyone else. You want the little scrawny girl in the back.
No, she looks smart. She's
already tripped over her own feet. Nope, it's her.
She looks smart. She'll figure it out.
Oh, man. She looks
clever and scrappy. Exactly.
Fox-faced.
Well, that's all I had.
Fox-faced should have won.
Fox-faced should have won.
So that's all I had. Did you guys have anything you wanted to add?
No. Give just it out with puberty supplies.
Welcome to
Womanheard. Here's the Grace year.
Here.
Hey, I hate to tell you this, but you're welcome to being a woman. You're going to get paid less than men. It's going to be hard for you to get into any job field you want to be in, and you're always going to be looked down on. And here's a book to remind you of that. Good luck. Yeah. Good luck. Mm-hmm. Yep. You want a kiss on the head or a slap in the ass? That's the only two things you're getting here.
You want both? I'll give you both.
But that's the only positive affirmations
we're getting. Those are the options.
Yes.
Oh, man. So before we let you go, Chezzy, we're going to show what we're doing for the rest of this month. Is that cool? Is that for next month? Not this month, for next month. So we're starting off April with this book. This is How You Lose the Time War.
I love that book.
Do you?
Yes.
I'm only like 20 pages in.
It's very weird. I don't want to give too much away.
I'm here for the weird.
But it's very weird. It's very like nebulous almost, but it's good. I like it a lot.
I'm here for weird.
So it's by Amal L. Motor and Max Gladstone. So it's a dual author.
Oh god, I'm gonna screw those up so bad.
And I'm enjoying it so far.
I'm the lead of that book.
You'll be fine. We're going to read Allie Hazelwood's Bride, which is her first try at paranormal romance.
I'll show this off next time. It is an Afterlife exclusive.
Cool.
I want a book with sprayed edges so bad.
Oh my god. Eliza and her monsters in Afterlight. Oh, kill me now. I would die.
Do they have one of it? No.
We need to talk to your people. Tell them about Afterlight.
Is that the British one?
I'm obsessed with. Yeah.
I don't want to pay British import tax. I want Chezzy to have sprayed edges here.
What if I just do it myself?
I'll buy it.
I'll just do it myself on two copies and send them to you.
That's very sweet of you, baby.
we'll take it.
Of course.
The third book we're going to be doing for April, Molly has a copy. I don't have a copy yet. It is The Very Secret Society of Irregular Witches.
Super cute.
And you've already read that one. I have not yet. So we're going to do that one. And then we're going to wrap up the month of April with a preview episode of the Annapolis Book Festival, because we will be there at the end of this month. And we're going to do some like plugging and marketing and what people can expect instead of doing like a traditional episode, because we have to read a lot of books to prepare for Annapolis Book Festival. So we need to like maybe not read so much for pod.
Possibly.
But
I have a list and it's like pod books, festival books.
Molly made a schedule, guys.
This is my list of books. Like I have an order and everything. Like, you know, if I'm getting organized, we got a problem, gang.
I have been the one that's been the slacker this season, honestly, because of my health. So before we go, Chezzy, are you writing anything?
Yes, I just finished something. It is not, we're not under contract or anything as of the recording of this episode, but I have finished something very exciting. And I am now working on something else.
Did you abandon the piano book?
No, it's done. It's been done for a while. We haven't.
Oh, I finished it. Jesus Christ, Francesca.
I have so many finished books that we just haven't sold to anybody. So
I'll buy it. I have no authority to do anything with it.
I got a belding for that one. No, but it did let me. I'm finally able to go back and continue working on my cyberpunk Count of Monte Cristo retelling.
Oh yes, that's so cool.
You and I never started our Valley Girl book.
Oh my god.
Valley Girls meets Salem Witch Trial.
Oh, but
we already read that with Kirsten in this book.
I was gonna say, I think we just
read it. Okay, well, cool. So you've promised us a book between now and next year, so...
Has it been written?
I guess.
You better...
It has. It has been written.
Good for you.
I now need to contact my agent and be like, all right.
I made a promise.
We gotta hit the gas.
She like, I may have made promises on the internet on accident.
But you released Katzenjammer and Greymas Fair. Was it with like not the same year, but within the same 12 months, right?
Yes, it was. There was Katzenjammer came out in July of 22, mm-hmm. and Greymas Fair came out in March of 23.
Yeah, so
no big,
yeah,
no big deal.
Yeah,
just two novels back to back.
Yeah, you know, they're both really good. Read Greymas Fair if you haven't already read it.
Seriously.
Vegan, and then go watch the episode because that movie's good.
And Katzenjammer. It's a weird ass book.
Katzenjammer is weird.
And I'm the queen of weird ass books.
Genre. I still enjoyed it. The big reveal, and I'm not going to give away the spoiler, but the big reveal, I went, holy shit, this is
Katzenjammer will fuck you up in a good way.
Yeah.
My boyfriend refuses to read it. Because he knows what happens in it, and he can't. He's like, I can't handle that. And I'm like,
it was a hard one for me.
It's a hard one to read. But indeed.
Okay. Well, it's always lovely to have you.
We love having you.
I'm just assuming you're coming on next season because I am going to win.
I mean, we just tell you, and you come now. It's like you have two big sisters who tell you to do things now, and you just do them.
I was going to say, you just tell me, like, hey, we have an opening for you here on the schedule. I'm like, great, awesome. What books are we reading? What are we doing? What's happening? Yep,
exactly.
We love you, Chessie. Truly.
I love you guys too. Aww.
I want to meet you in person.
I know. I do too.
Just come to Annapolis. Just come to Annapolis and hang out.
I should.
At the end of April.
Fuck it.
I don't know if I can do that one, but.
JK, she said, calm down. Whoa.
Next year, though.
I would love
it. A different book festival? I don't know.
Maybe you gotta drag us.
Maybe something in Virginia. Yeah. That would be great.
Or Ohio. Then we could introduce her to Katie. Mm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, we gotta go.
We have dreams. All right,
besties.
All right, so we'll see you all next week. Thank you again, Francesca Gaffia.
Thank you, Chessie.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on Book Besties with special guest, top shelf author Francesca Zappia. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly, not those of anyone else. Today's book was The Grace Year by Kim Liggett. Your Book Besties are Molly Biggs and April Watkins, editing by Thomas Watkins, and music is Sleep Sweetly by Prigida. Don't forget to follow the Book Besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact the Book Besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. Until next time, besties, get lost in your favorite book.